I would maybe do.
Hold on a second. Don't say a word until this bitch gets cracking, Bert Kreischer.
Trained by
Bert Kreischer. Bert Kreischer, I want you to keep it together. I want you to hold on.
I want
you to realize this is a goddamn commercial-free podcast exceptional edition. This is an exception. The podcast was so good it cannot be stopped for the greater good of Shiva or Odin or Thor or Cassiopeia. Did anybody ever worship Cassiopeia?
Was that the watch?
Some chick, some dude probably wanted to fuck and he got all exaggerated with how hot she was. Named her a fucking consolation or some
what
shit.
What a great Cassiopeia. I bet her website's available.
How good does your pussy have to be before they name a consolation after it? Not even like a tree.
Why?
Not a rock. Not a mountain. No, a series of nuclear explosions in the middle of the universe.
Why haven't they rebooted Thor and like he got a haircut yet?
Because Thor doesn't need a fucking haircut. He's dope. Don't be hating. Listen, Brian, you have a full head of hair. You shouldn't be hating because I have almost zero hair and I'm not hating, okay?
It's a matter of time before I shave my head.
It's your issues. You should do it.
I sprinkle the hair in now.
Freeing things.
You sprinkle it?
Yeah, I sprinkle still.
Yeah. Dude, shaving your head is a beautiful feeling.
Is it?
Do it. Just do it. Trust me. Just do it once. You obviously don't give a fuck about your body, okay? Let's be realistic.
He's been working out a lot lately.
You're not. Let's be honest. You know I love you. But let's be honest. If you were entering into a bodybuilding contest, I would say this guy does not want to win. Okay?
Yeah.
He is not trying to win Sexiest Man.
There's even look good in Europe in a Speedo.
You're not even trying. It's not that there's anything wrong with that. Let's be honest about our paths in this life, ladies and gentlemen.
So, Death Squad Scotland and Death Squad Ohio are losing their fucking minds because they're...
I told you, stop communicating with those people. You don't know them. You have not vetted them, sir.
I know Death Squad Ohio, they're awesome.
You say you know.
No, Brian does know them.
Yeah, God damn it. None of you motherfuckers have a proper filter in place. We need to fucking set up some scientific checks and balances, much like the CIA uses.
If this...
You can't just decide you can let some motherfucker send you some whiskey.
Oh, I can't believe...
That coconut... We have a refrigerator here at Higher Primate Studios. We're so not fucking around, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, we're taking this to the next level, Bert Kreischer. Do you see what we're doing here? I got my own Buddha.
Care package from Onnit.
Yeah, you got a care package from Onnit, and we got the Buddha responsible for my tattoo.
Oh, is that the Buddha?
He's an asshole.
I don't know if you
he's like, hi guys,
are
I'm
you,
here.
Are you done with tattoos? Are you gonna?
I'm gonna fill in my right arm. Can you see that shit?
Your right arm.
That is the same Buddha. The guy who did my arm, first of all, he's a beautiful artist. And he's a cool motherfucker. His name's Aaron Dellavedova, and he works at Guru Tattoo in San Diego. I would get tattooed just to hang out with that dude. He's so cool. He's a real artist. He's really cool paintings, and I love his point of view. Like, it's so uniquely his own. You remember that guy that was Jesse James, rather, who was married to Sandra Bullock?
Yeah, yeah.
Remember he had that affair with some girl
with the swastika tattooed on her forehead.
Well, I saw no, she didn't have that.
Yeah, she did.
No. It was not a swastika.
White power.
No, she did. Dude, she did not. No,
she definitely did.
No.
She had swastikas tattooed somewhere.
Stop it. Stop.
No, swear to God, Joe. No, she really did.
I'm telling you, you're wrong.
What's her name?
It's like Michelle Dynamite or something like that.
No.
But anyway, my point is that she had this sleeve, and I looked at the sleeve, and I said, that's an Aaron Dellavedova tattoo. I could tell. His style is so distinctive. And I'm such a huge fan of individual points of expression where, like there's certain, like, pool cues where you could look at the pool cue and you know that is a sugar tree. That's a cue that Eric Crisp made. That is a Cognoscenti. That's a cue that Joe Gold made. Like, they have, like, this individual point of expression.
Michelle McGee.
Where it's like, Michelle McGee. Yeah, she did a Nazi photo shoot. That's what it was. She does not have any tattoos.
Yeah, she doesn't have tattoos.
This
Nazis
was, like,
on
some
her.
Crazy photo shoot that she had to do.
Although it does say WP on her leg.
Yeah.
Like, as in white power.
No. Or, is that what it means?
Or...
Ew, whoa. Is that really what it means?
WP? I don't think... What else?
Whip it poop?
What was my point about her?
You were talking about your tattoo artist did her arm or something?
Oh, I saw her arm. And one of her arms, I think it's her right sleeve.
Yeah.
His style is so distinct.
Did you search that guy out?
Well, I looked in California, and I was looking at all these different... You know, it's like, there's a lot of really good artists in California, especially even Kat Von D, who we've had on the podcast.
Ah, that's a great podcast.
Yeah, she was really cool. There's so many, like, I don't even want to name names.
Yeah.
There's a million talented artists. But when I saw Aaron's work on mine, especially sleeves and big back pieces, like, his style is really about big, bold, like, pieces.
Yeah.
And when I started talking to him, like, immediately we hit it off. I was like, this guy was cool as fuck. He's so cool. Like, I was like, you know what? You talk to someone, you really, like, happy to have a conversation with them.
Yeah.
And we were, like, on the perfect level. Like, really, like, you know, both of us were talking about all kinds of, like, different crazy shit, and he's an honorable person, and he's an artist, and it's like right away I was like, I love this guy.
No,
like, right away, it's a perfect guy to do it.
What did you guys if you remember, I'm curious to see if you remember, what did you guys talk about while he was tattooing you?
Everything and anything, man.
Like, do you remember any of the conversation? Like, is it?
Yeah. We have it on video.
Is it like a meaningful?
We have in the beginning.
Are you serious?
The first sleeve, the beginning of the first sleeve, a lot of it was on video, but then the second sleeve is like about 3 years old. I still have to go back. I still, there's a few spots on it.
It's amazing.
Most of it is a Miyamoto Musashi piece, who's the guy who is the...
And there's the graphics Joker. I thought you got rid of the graphics Joker.
Yeah,
I thought you did too.
I have to. It's not quite done yet. I got it.
I think they should pimp that out.
Yeah. No, it's like, it's not...
Leave it. Remember who you are.
It was like really even before I knew what a graphics Joker was.
You drew it, right?
Stupid idea. Yeah, I drew it. Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
But I caught that shit.
You did.
That's my jujitsu experience, my friend.
Jujitsu.
But
that's a Jameson experience.
Can you see that tattoo? I did draw it. I drew that in 1990. It looks like shit now. It's blurred.
I like it.
The guy who...
better than Waterfalls.
The guy who tattooed it for me did a fucking brilliant job. His name was Danny Williams, and he died of cancer really recently. And the bottom tattoo, the really crazy-looking samurai guy, that is Miyamoto Musashi, and he's fighting a tiger. And that's...
What happened? What happened to you?
Some sick artwork, man.
Like,
that's all my man Aaron Dellavedova's work. And he does...
San Diego.
He does brilliant work. It's, the beach.
What was the turn?
For what?
For you. Like, where you went from, like, one tattoo and not smoking weed to, like... Well, I don't. Maybe I've heard.
Well,
you say
you know
this, but
what it was. I always like tattoos. I always like the artwork of it. I'm a big fan of. I'm a big fan of music. I'm a big fan of writing. I'm a big fan of movies and cars and paintings and anything that you do that expresses whatever you have inside of yourself through some medium, whether it's the medium of making a hot rod or it's the medium of even designing clothes. Like, I'm wearing some crazy T-shirt right now some dude gave me. It's a Bruce Lee, who's acting as a DJ. I thought that was hilarious. So
that's great.
It's funny.
Yeah.
It's someone's idea that's expressed through clothes. You know, you can express it through furniture. Like, my friend
this table. Table's badass.
Yeah, I mean, you can express it through anything, but it really, it's all the same thing. The idea is that... everything that a person can enjoy is someone else trying to express some sort of positive idea through whatever medium it is, whether it's a fucking, whether it's Les Miserables, whether it's 50 Shades of Grey, it's all the same thing, you know?
But what was the turning point? Do you remember the thing?
No. I don't know. I was probably some psychedelic drug-related experience, most
really?
Likely. Yeah. Yeah, that was the...
But what got you there?
Well, if marijuana is a gateway drug, I'm really, unfortunately, a good example. But I don't think that it's a negative gateway. I think we have to get over that idea, and I think a big part of the struggle that we have in this country is a lot of conservative people misunderstand the position of people that support marijuana or cannabis. And it doesn't mean that they're mutually exclusive, and it doesn't mean that they have to be in combat with each other. It just means that, for whatever reason, as a society, we have associated cannabis smokers and users with lazy bitches. And that's stupid.
Yeah.
And I think that if I have benefited as an unnecessarily aggro, you know, child of the 80s, if I have benefited from the magical gift of marijuana, then I bet you can too. It just needs to be used properly. And it's going to make you examine yourself in a way that may be uncomfortable, but is most likely necessary. You know, and the ideas that we have connected to any sort of psychedelic experience, marijuana or peyote, you name it, mushrooms, automatically people of a conservative nature will assume that the people involved in doing this thing are being lazy or they're being frivolous. They're being frivolous because they've decided to, like, seek escape through chemicals rather than deal with reality. But if they really knew, they would know that that's not the case. If they really had experience, they would know that, no, it's the exact opposite.
I hate to fucking bring up this goddamn Radiolab show again.
Bring it
they
up.
Were talking about religious experiences and people who did acid. They took these kids at in school, took them down to a church setting where a church sermon was going on. They're all religious teachers, okay? All religious teachers, like religious students, they all take acid and they hear a sermon in the church with the beautiful bells. Oh. And they said that 9 out of 10 people in the test group, so there's 20, 10 have a bullshit, you know, the placebo, 10 out of the other one, 9 out of 10 had a religious experience.
Wow.
And they were saying that that 9 out of 10 also went on to teach in the ministry. Like 9 out of 10 people that took acid, and they were talking about the concept of whether or not you could do acid and whether or not you could create a religious experience. And if you could, why wouldn't you have that all the time? Why wouldn't everyone look for that?
Well, what's what we were talking about earlier about, like, one day maybe we can get our shitty brains to accept a state of opiate and MDMA at the same time, all the time.
I want, like, a low-grade cocaine.
Well, think about what's going on. I mean, all respect to people who are on antidepressants, and this is not an antidepressant rant, and I think, quite honestly, that there's quite a few of those rants that they're ignorant. And even though, you know, we had a conversation with Cara Santa Maria, who's on the podcast.
Fucking loved her. Yeah. That girl was so fucking – I've regurgitated some of her facts in conversation, not realizing I'm doing it. I fucking was so – I was afraid to Google her and see what she looked like. So I was like, what if she's not hot? Because she was so hot on this podcast. Just listen to her. You were like, she's
beautiful.
Smoking. And but I saw her.
More importantly, she's – very fascinating. Very, very, very
really fascinating.
Person. And what was my point?
Psychedelics.
Olive Garden next week.
Three of them in a row.
Psychedelics.
Are you taking her to Olive Garden?
Yeah, next week. I'm taking her to Olive Garden.
Hey, you want to do a double date?
Nope.
How dare you?
Trying fucking to just hang out with her.
He'd be rubbing his dick in
just cock blocking the fuck out of you.
But anyway, the point was that she was describing her own personal benefit from using antidepressants and her own personal, you know, her personal benefit from, like, regulating her state of consciousness, but with the use of science. And if you really stop and think about it, like, some of the best feelings that I've ever had have been under the influence of chemicals. You know, whether it's right now or whether it's you know, the first time I ever did anything, which was MDMA, anything of significance. When that feeling is so sensational, like, what would life be if that feeling existed all the time? We automatically have this thought in our head that cannot be managed. And that needs to be discarded right away, immediately, for the state of consciousness that you exist right now can never be elevated. This is what it is. But how do we even know that's true?
I wonder sometimes because I go, I feel like I spend my day chasing a buzz where it's like like coffee in the morning, and then there's this, like, dead period in the afternoon where I'm like, well,
before the beer comes.
Yeah, before the beer comes.
When do you feel it's respectable to start drinking a beer?
5.
5 p.m.? Yeah, 5 p.m. Yeah, leave me alone, woman. At 5 p.m. you can say leave me alone.
Oh,
I had a hard day at work. Who keeps the fucking lights on?
Some of the best moments of my life are when my wife had a job. We were living in an apartment complex. We had a nanny only because I was on the road, and sometimes the nanny and I would overlap, and I'd be there when she would be there. The best feelings, my kids are there, sun setting in Hollywood, my wife walking up in the door and just going, did anyone open a bottle of wine? Oh, motherfucker. I remember getting, like, chills like it's Christmas Eve. Like, oh, and we crack open a bottle of wine, we pour one for the nanny, we just sit on the couch and socks. Fuck.
Oh, you're
fucking
hilarious.
Love. I love those kind of moments.
You love, like, ultimate relaxation moments where everybody agrees.
Yes.
That it's time
where
to crack
everyone's
open.
On the same page. I think that's one of the things.
Crack open the bottle. Everybody agrees.
Yeah. Oh, it's great. Like,
well, that's why you're like sort of the ultimate party meister. It's like you're the guy that would get everybody, fucking Bert wants to do shots. Let's do shots. Are we doing shots? Give me a hug, you fucks. I love you. And everybody would get together.
Right? I think, yeah, I love that feeling when like it's like just fucking someone just goes, I go, is it going to be awkward if I order a beer? And someone will be like, if you get one, I'll get one. I'm like, we're fucking drinking.
Yeah, right away.
I fucking love that feeling. I think that's what the feeling people get when they connect, when they smoke marijuana, is that someone likes it and then they're like, nah. And they're like, okay.
Right.
Like, it's such a great, like.
There's definitely a thing that comes with being like in that sort of fraternity of people that know. You know, they know you'd smoke pot. Everybody's in this like, oh, we're all cool in this, right? Yeah.
Because, like,
as much as you sort of accept the traditional notion of reality, like if you've never gotten high, you and I have very little to talk about. I mean, we can talk about a few things. For certain, we can talk about facts and statistics and history and numbers. We can talk about a lot of things. But we can't talk about what the fuck is going on when you think about someone and then the phone rings and it's them. We can't talk about that because you're going to give me some scaredy cat answer. You're going to go, well, it's just sort of a coincidence.
Their brain taps out.
Really,
they go,
there's no relationship whatsoever. There's never been a statistical correlation between you thinking about someone and then them calling you and that meaning anything significant whatsoever. It's just nonsense. I need you to get a rip and put a tie on and wear some shiny shoes with slippery soles and walk down the street like a gentleman. I don't know, but I know that when a little light bulb goes off in my head and I think about Bert Kreischer, and then I look down at my phone and it starts ringing immediately and it's Bert Kreischer, well, call me crazy, but I think something's up. Okay? I think there's something fucking going on when I think about you and then all of a sudden you call me immediately.
Shit happens every day, nonstop.
Yeah.
It happens a lot.
And you know when it happens? You ready for this, Brian Redband? It happens when you're living your life correctly. When you're living your life correctly, the universe gives you a lot of fucking secret messages. The universe.
You think that's what it is?
Absolutely.
I like yesterday, this is something crazy as an example. Yesterday, I was talking to my friend who's a ginger, and I'm like, is there such things as Jewish gingers? I've never even heard. I've never seen a Jewish ginger before. And she was like, of course there is. And then like 2 hours later, somebody else just was like, oh, this guy, he's a ginger. He's a Jewish ginger. Have you ever seen one of these? I'm like, all right, I've never talked about Jewish gingers my whole entire life. Now, twice in one day.
There's a possibility that you attracted that. There's a possibility that much like you ever send an email on Google, you know, it could be about anything. You could like send an email and say, hey, man, I'm looking to get a life-size copy of the robot from Lost in Space.
Yeah.
And then you look in the corner of your Gmail when you get on it, it'll be all Lost in Space
different.
Shit.
That's because it's reading your email.
Right, 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 exactly.
So you think somebody's reading my
exactly.
My presence?
So
my
if
vibe?
Oh, I like this well, theory
this
already.
This is my point. If reality is a simulation, wouldn't it follow the same principles that your Gmail or your Yahoo has, where you'll see the corners where shit that you've sent emails about will be reoccurring themes in your life?
I do that in life all the time. I put it out there.
But isn't it fascinating?
You put it out
it's
there.
A program.
It mirrors what we know is a program.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fucked up.
It's true.
You're right.
Yeah.
It's just the fucking natural course of history of how life's going to go down. It already happens in life. God does it. The universe does it. It trickles onto you.
You sound like you're ripe for a cult. I could fucking get you to sign up right now.
Let me tell you something. Give me some blue Nikes.
Suck my dick in a house full of feathers.
I could be so quickly put into a cult.
I've been watching this documentary on the Vice guys made a documentary about this fucking dude who's a he's the new Jesus. He's a Siberian Jesus. Have you seen that, Brian?
Mm-mm.
Listen, ladies and gentlemen.
I pull it up.
No, we shouldn't pull it up because it's a really long piece.
Those Vice guys are crazy.
It's at least I've only watched the first 2 10-minute pieces, but it's fascinating. There's a guy in Siberia that's created a village, and he's like the second coming of Jesus. He's like the new Jesus. And he has thousands of people that are living up there. thousands. They're all living up there. But meanwhile, they're living in an unbelievably beautiful place. I mean, it is stunning. If you, maybe see if you can find some photos. But it's staggeringly beautiful. And this guy, he's not preaching anything bad except being a vegan. That's silly. But
I gotta have
he's
meat.
He's a vegan.
Fucking even when I was doing that clean program,
vegan Jesus.
I'd have chicken with fucking lettuce wraps. Oh. Yeah. I love spicy shit.
Yeah, I wish that animals weren't so fucking delicious.
They're fucking amazing.
And I wish that they didn't fucking keep making animals. Maybe they would just all live forever and everyone would be immortal. We have enough numbers now and just keep it going.
I had duck heart
last
night.
There's the dude. That's
who?
The,
let me see.
That was the photo of the dude who's the Russian Jesus. Meanwhile, he's got an awesome spot.
I don't think I ever saw Jesus smile.
Yeah, well, he does when Green Day's playing.
He's always sad because he's hurt.
All Jesus' pictures were like hip-hop cover albums, like just, what's up?
The Australian Jesus is a guy in Queensland, and he says he's Jesus, too.
I was just in Queensland. What's that guy look
what
like?
What were you doing? Were you doing stand-up?
No, he did a trip flip in Australia.
Oh, in Queensland.
Fucking Australia? Was best it? Country I've ever been to. Yeah, I'm telling you when I say this, and I'm not shitting on America, and I'm not shitting on Canada because you guys are second, but Australia blows everyone away.
I love the people there. I love their attitude. It's like it's a more we are so uptight in this country. We're really so unbelievably uptight, especially when it comes to like going out and having fun and relaxing.
I'd move to Australia in a fucking heartbeat.
There's this thing about America that America was sort of founded and created by a bunch of people that have come here from somewhere that sucked and they had enough and they just made it over to some new spot. But I think that the type of person that it takes to be able to get in a boat and travel across the ocean and land
like
in some new
months.
Land, I think it takes several generations before everybody fucking relaxes.
That's the badass motherfuckers that could get in a boat and fucking do that. Because you just shook the loose leaves got shaken off the tree.
They were so gangster. They got in a goddamn boat and traveled across oceans
that?
With no radio, no TV.
Do you ever
TV,
think about that, though, when you travel with your kids somewhere, and then you go, how would we travel across America?
How would
your family size up in a wagon train going from New York to L.A.?
My family would have either stayed. I mean, if you had little children, you would have stayed in Italy or Ireland. You would have done whatever you could do to stay where you were. But my grandfather's family came over here in, I want to say, the early 1900s. My grandfather's family came over here from Italy.
Yeah.
And my grandfather lived on a farm, and he used to tell me stories about how they used to kill rabbits with their hand, to grab them by the neck and snap them. That was like a normal part of your life. And there was, you know, winters where, like, they would run out of food. Like, there was no food. Like, they'd have to go and borrow food from people that were neighbors. So crazy times, man.
It's crazy. You know what's crazy? More crazy
like,
than that is the, like, and I say this guessingly, but, like, the amount of humility your grandfather must have had.
He was a very humble guy.
Like, to come here.
Almost too humble. You know, he got walked on by my grandmother. My grandmother was, like, a really strong woman, and she used to yell at him all the time when I was, like, a little kid. Because my mom had me when she was 20, and, you know, my mom did her best, but she was really young. You know, when you're 20 years old, and all of a sudden you're raising a baby, that's a...
Your grandparents are only
21.
40.
I was 21 when I was born. Or when my mother was 21, rather, when I was born. Dirt. I was 21 when I was born. I might as well have been. I would probably feel like, oh, my God, this bitch is 21. She doesn't know what the fuck is going on. I got to get up to a 21-year-old
mentality. Your grandparents are like, what, 37?
No, they're older than that.
40?
Right
they could
now?
Have been. No, at the time you were born.
I don't know. I don't know how old they were. I mean, it's hard for me to wrap my head around now. I don't want to do the math. But the point was my mother was young. And so, like, growing up with like a young mother that doesn't necessarily know what the fuck is going on makes you realize at a young age, like, oh shit. This
lady, makes you start looking at everything a little differently.
This lady doesn't know what the fuck is going on.
I don't think she can make eggs.
She was okay with that, but I'm like, we are both in this fucking crazy thing together. You realize like kind of early on that no one knows what the fuck is going on.
That's crazy. I can't imagine. My biggest hiccup in life was getting into stand-up because I didn't have any humility at that time in my life. And my dad gave me a speech on my 26th birthday that was like fucking aggressive. Like
really?
Like
you're 26?
26. It was on my birthday. Like he called me and I thought he was going to wish me happy birthday.
Oh my god.
And he was like, "You're a fucking loser."
Oh my god.
He's like, you make me embarrassed. I'm embarrassed that you're my son. I lie about you.
Oh, my God.
He goes, you know what that's like? To have a judge say, I heard your son got his life's option by Oliver Stone. He's in New York doing stand-up. How's he doing? He goes, I lied in fucking court. He goes, it makes me sick to my stomach. I was like, what can I do different? And he goes, nothing. I was like, well, can I fix this? And he goes, I know. I failed you as a father. And it got me to, like, it changed my life. Like, I went, he taught me how to get, taught me how to be humble enough to get a job in stand-up. Because you just needed to work the door, but I thought I was above that. I thought that I was better than that. Like, I thought that someone would just grab me and put me on stage and I'd be discovered. That's how I thought it happened. I know you could literally be humble and say, I want to do this. How do I go about doing this? Please help me to someone. And he got me into it and literally started doing it the next night, and 6 months later I had a deal, and it was like, it was a fucking one of the greatest things I ever did. I look back at that so fondly, those times. Me, like, outside, this is every single night hanging outside. Jim Norton, Bobby Kelly, Patrice O'Neill, Colin, like, not Colin Quinn, actually. I've never actually met him until recently.
Why'd you just throw him in there?
Because I started getting into a Tough Crowd mentality. I started listening off the credits of Tough Crowd. I was like, me, Bobby Kelly, that's like,
yeah, Nick Colin DiPaolo.
But I called myself, Nick. I'm honest, I never met Nick that's either, funny. So.
You never
but,
met Nick?
No, I mean, I've seen them come, I worked the door when he'd come in and do the club, but I never, like, knew
have
him.
Have you ever seen him on stage?
It's fucking,
Nick's brilliant.
I love him, man.
Nick DiPaolo, to me, is one of the most underrated comedians in this country.
Hands down, no questions asked. He's the kind of guy you can tell his jokes to your friend at a bar and they fucking lose their mind.
Dude, he had a joke about her. Remember when Katrina hit? Dude, it's so cruel. It was so fucked up. But he goes, yeah, they were writing rescue signs on the roof. On the roof, but I'm not doing this any justice. I'm so sorry.
I was already thinking of doing a Nick bit, and I was like, there's no way I'll get through it.
They were signing rescue signs on the roof, but they were misspelling them. Instead of help, it said hep. You want some hep? Drink that fucking water. If you want some hep, drink that water.
Nick DiPaolo.
I'm sorry, Nick. I butchered your joke. I apologize.
I wish I knew his joke about, he goes, a lot of guys, I'm not going to do this any justice either. A lot of people say they haven't said the N-word. A lot of people say that. Really? I guess you never put $1,000 on a playoff game then. I know I ruined that bit, but
No, fucking, that was good.
Nick DiPaolo is one of the funniest. I watched Nardi and Ick.
$1,000 on a playoff game.
I watched Nardi and Artie and Nick on the fucking same thing Dan Patrick shows on. I watch it because I respect Nick both those Artie guys show. So much that I go guys. That it's not the best show sometimes.
Well,
but
this is what I think. That show would be fucking magic. If it was uncensored. And to take Nick and Artie and put them on regular radio
is
like
that.
Taking Joey Diaz and make him, instead of talk, write with a crayon.
Yeah.
It's nonsense. It's fucking stupid.
I watch it all the time, though, because it's like,
I love Nick and Artie. Someone with some fucking balls, please take that show, put it on the internet. You'd make more money. There'd have more people listening. And you could still put it on DirecTV or whatever the fuck you're putting it on. It still would be. But let Nick be Nick. Let Artie be Artie. Let him be crazy. Let him fucking talk completely unhindered.
The way he, we were talking, I was talking to someone recently about bomb lines, and Nick, bomb lines, like when you're doing bad and a heckler's attacking you and you have your comeback, and Nick DiPaolo has a time, I'm once again, I'm butchering whatever this story is because I don't remember it, but Nick said that he was getting heckled by this girl it was her bachelorette party, and he was on the road in some podunk town, and he was like, ma'am, I hope the next time you reach under your armpit you feel a lump. and he goes, I've never had an entire crowd hate me more. And they had to escort him, like, to the green room.
Oh my god.
But he's a fucking old school, like, old school kind of, like, that's the kind of dad I meet dads at, like, my kids' school, and I wonder if they know who the fuck I am. Like, then they do know who I am. They figure out who I am. They'll Google me and they'll go, oh shit, I didn't know you were this guy. I can be this guy around you. Like, I wonder if,
oh, I see what you're saying.
I wonder if, like, parents, because he's got kids, if they meet him and they have no clue of who he is, and then, like, Google him, and then they're like, oh my god, I can tell this joke in front of you. He's one of the funniest fucking human beings, man.
He's a very nice guy, too.
Did you ever do Tough Crowd?
Yeah.
Tough Crowd was a definitive show in my life.
Yeah.
I would just have my first daughter.
Fun show.
I've been doing the road, and I knew a lot of those guys most of those guys from doing stand-up.
It's really
in New York.
A tragedy that that show was canceled. It's so silly. It's
bullshit.
It seems like why would you ever? I mean, it was such an easy resource. You know, it was easy to get comedians. Everybody wanted to be on it. It was very entertaining.
It's a podcast in the past.
What?
You got to talk into my
phone. It's pretty much a podcast.
Yeah,
it was
you're
a podcast.
Right. It was a limited time limited podcast. This listen, man, we're so lucky that we are existing in this time where you can do this thing, where you can do whatever the fuck you want. No one's telling us what to do. We're doing whatever we want. We decided to keep going. We decided to end the podcast, take a leak, and keep going. There's no producers. There's no. That's the beauty of a situation.
Oh,
like this
is when Greg Giraldo and fucking Dennis Leary. Hit pause for a second, Brian.
This is a
or
funny.
Or keep
this
the volume
is a funny
down.
Story because Giraldo never even went to the nuclear weapons, which is plagiarism. He never even went to that.
Yeah.
You know, he never even went to that. But Leary was so cunty with him, like right off the bat.
Greg Giraldo was a fucking beautiful dude. He was just the nicest fucking guy.
He was very intelligent.
In a time where, in my life, when no one needed to be nice to me, mm-hmm. there were two people that were distinctly nice to me and gentle, and that was Bill Burr and Greg Giraldo. Like, you know, Norton and Bobby and all those guys were always nice to me, but man, Giraldo and Bill Burr took time, pulled me aside, and like, they were fucking great guys. I remember one time calling into my buddy Cowhead's show, and because Giraldo was on, and calling in to listen to Giraldo's interview, because I just loved Greg, and Cowhead told him, and Greg goes, oh, put him on the phone, I want to talk to him, and I talked to Greg for like fucking 10 minutes in between a break and a song, and just was like, man, how's everything going? And he was like, well.
Yeah,
like,
he was very sincere.
Fucking great guy.
He had a show. I don't remember what network it was on, but
it was his sitcom. It was on during when yours was, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He talked about partying with the girl that was on your show.
Which one?
The girl with the big tits.
Who?
On news radio.
Girl with the big tits.
Didn't that one girl have big tits?
No.
Who was the girl on
Andy
your show?
Dick.
There was beautiful girls, but
I always thought
Maura. Maura.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I always thought
Maura
she had big tits.
Did not have big.
I thought her tits were so big they had to tape them up.
Maura was the white girl with black hair.
Yeah, she was the lead.
Oh, listen, that's
just had big nipples.
That's a terrible misunderstanding.
Oh, she was beautiful.
No, she was very beautiful and incredibly talented.
Oh, fucking wanted to drink a bottle of white wine with her so bad.
I did a scene with her once. I'll never forget this. And I told her, and she just sort of laughed it off. She's like, really like, she wasn't. She would never, like, brag about her talent, like, as an actor.
She was good.
But we did a scene together, and I didn't realize that she was acting. I thought she was saying something to me. And I was like, oh, that's the words. Oh, whoa. I go, holy shit, you badass bitch. I go, I didn't know you were acting. I go, you just fucking rocked me. Like, she rocked me with what she was saying. Because the set of news radio was very loose. There was a lot of fucking off. And there was also a lot of improvisation, where it's like, Dave Foley was responsible for a huge amount of like what got on the air of that show because he was almost like a secret producer, and it was because the guys who wrote the show were like they were so open minded and so smart, and Paul Sims, who was the executive producer, was just this really brilliant guy who recognized that there was a lot of people like Andy or like Phil Hartman or like Dave Foley or whatever who would have this. Intuition while they were on stage working out the scenes, that they would come up with new things and to incorporate those new things. So Dave was like constantly tweaking things and adding things, and it was, you know, and being able to watch that and to watch someone do that and to be in that situation, I was like, wow, I'm like this is like an ideal situation.
This is gonna sound cunty, not cunty, but weird, but so like. Last year was a very good year for me, and I'm also in the middle of our school, so we're like our kids are in third grade, and like now we've been at school long enough that kind of we know all the parents, and so like I was this like I was the resident famous comedian parent, like, oh, he's a comedian. I think Dave Foley's kids go to our school now, and Dave Foley, they were like, have you heard Dave Foley? Like, he spoke at a PTA moment. Apparently he's a fucking amazing dad. Like, I'm either that or it's a guy that looks like Dave Foley.
What do you mean?
He's an amazing dad. Like, he, like, oh, fucking shows up and does all the
shit.
Yeah. And they were like, and I don't go to anything. I don't even go to recitals. Like, I just fucking.
He's a very solid dude. That was a great set But what I'm saying about Morris, she was built.
Oh, yeah.
She's a very pretty, beautiful woman. Huge but knockers. She didn't have big knockers.
Oh, she was fucking hot as shit.
Yeah. She's very, very
but hot. Yeah, but Greg Giraldo shot across from you guys, and you guys used to party, right?
And, well Greg was right next door, and he was, there's a lot of guys who had TV shows. There was a lot of guys who, like, got gigs back in those days. It was like they got a development deal, and maybe they had a few episodes. Like, my friend Tom Rhodes, he had a show for a while.
Fucking love Tom Rhodes.
He's a good dude. He's a great dude. And I met Tom, the first time I met him was when we were both on NBC. I was on news radio, and he had his own show. And then he went over to Amsterdam, and it's just, Tom's beautiful. He's fucking awesome.
He really is.
But he never lost his shit. You know, he's always been cool. He's always been like an open.
The night I met.
Tom Rhodes is like, in my opinion, like a fucking legit comedian.
Tom Rhodes is from Florida.
Yeah.
And I've told him the story a number of times, and he never really remembers it. But we ran into each other in Amsterdam. We did that Showtime special with Russell Peters. And I said, the fucking first night I met him, I was working at the Boston Comedy Club. I came downstairs, and he was at the bar. And I knew he was from Florida, and I was from Florida. And I like to stand up. And I walked up to him, and I was like, hey, man. My name's Bert. I'm a comedian. I just started. I'd love to ask you. And he stopped me, like put his hand on my chest and was like, listen, you start buying beers and I'll answer every question you want. And I was like, all right. So I put my fucking dad's credit card down and I fucking bought beers and talked to him about comedy for like 3 hours. It was fucking great.
He was one of the one dudes that did the Ice House Chronicles, and we had a long conversation afterwards.
Where I was with you.
Yeah, he was like, the camaraderie is so cool here. It's like we have like real comedian camaraderie.
He was hammered, and I said, yeah. I had a guy with me to drive me. And I was like, Tom, let us take you to your, because he was hammered.
Yeah, we were trying to tell him, there's no way you're driving.
Yeah, and he was like, ah, don't worry about me. Yeah, I sleep in the car, I wake up, and I go. He slept in his car.
You can't do that. That's illegal. If you sleep in your car, they'll arrest you. Yeah.
I just had a simulation thing happen to me, Joe. That Dennis Leary video that we were talking about, last night I watched this movie called Happy, which is all about depression and stuff like that. It's a documentary on Netflix. I recommend it. It's all right. But there was a guy in the movie that was like a motivational speaker to kids. And I was like, who is this guy? It's the guy on the right there. I've never seen this guy in my life.
Lenny Clark.
Yeah, and now he's in this fucking
Lenny
video.
Lenny is going to be on the podcast.
Are you serious?
Let me tell you something. The second time I ever did stand up for money, I opened for Lenny Clark. I used to say it was the first time, but it's a lie, ladies and gentlemen. The first time I opened up for a guy named Warren McDonald. That's the first time I ever got paid. But the second time I ever got paid, the truth is, I opened up for Lenny Clark. And I was in a place called Jay's in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. And Lenny, he's always been like super cool to me.
Look how fat Greg looks.
Does he look fat?
Yeah. Well, considering like.
Well, Greg, if you're comparing now.
Brian.
How?
Oh, Brian.
Dare you, you son of a bitch.
At least you know that Greg would have been going, that was a horrible joke.
Yeah. The big guy, by the way, Lenny has lost a shitload of weight. Yeah, Lenny is really thin now.
He was
a six-pack.
In that documentary.
So wait,
are you serious? In that documentary, he was pulling out towels because he wouldn't stop sweating.
Yeah.
And I was talking to the girl I was with last night, and I was like, isn't that crazy? He's just standing there talking to kids, and he can't stop sweating. There's like sweat all over his body.
What documentary was
this? It's called Happy, and I just saw it last night. I'd never seen this guy before in my life, and I just pull up this video, and he's in this video. It's so fucking simulation-y.
Wait, where's the part where Greg and fight?
We did that movie together, Here Comes the Boom, the Kevin James movie.
I haven't seen it, yeah.
And Lenny Clark was in that movie because it was shot in Boston, and Lenny played a local Boston guy. Lenny Clark, I fucking love that guy. But he lost a lot of weight, man. He lost a ton of weight. He looks great. I mean, he's like really lean. He doesn't have a gut at all.
A lot of Italian guys out of work.
That's right.
Who are very good at this.
That's true.
And I'm sure they would do it for a reasonable price, and they could come back, we could have a feast. And like they did in the Civil War.
Is this where Giraldo?
Where do they fight?
It's about the time, I think, right here.
What happens is laughing. Dennis Leary gets mad that Greg Giraldo has prepared material. It's really hilarious.
And that's how they found out where they were buried. The balls?
Yeah, no, well, no balls.
I use the expression, you know.
Is it during the Nukes of Hazzard?
I don't know. Someone should, like, find this off air. and figure it out because it's a really interesting.
There's a nonviolent way to solve a problem with the country that we hate that hates us. It's got weapons pointed at us. I don't think so.
No, you're right. Like Russia, for example, that big Russian war.
Dennis Leary's upset. Look at
you
him.
Have to be strong about it, but there are approaches. There are economic benefits that we're giving them in order to, for them to stop developing their weapons. I mean, I heard recently they agreed to stop building nukes if American women agree to get their nails done at least twice a week.
Here we go.
It's just something I read.
That's a good voice.
This Look guy writes so many jokes before the show, it's not even funny. It's unbelievable. Wow. He's got a pocket full of them. Yeah.
They're good ones.
I'm not saying they're not good.
I know. It was right there.
That's kind of what we do here, Dennis. Yeah. I'm a comedy writer.
Wow.
Oh, boy.
Here we go.
I'm not coming back. You know what? That's it.
You're the guy in school that did all the homework and then asked if there was any more that needed to be done.
Yeah. That's a good point. And if you had tried a little comedy writing, maybe your show would still be on the air.
Fucking Geraldo, bitches!
They tell me all the time.
Yeah, she said the sanitation guys, what they say about
he just crushed him.
That's great.
But that's the thing that happens when dudes get famous. They think a guy can't come along and clown you.
Dude, tell me about it. It's the first time I went on the road and I realized there are killers that I have never heard of.
No, but when a guy gets famous to a point where you're a Tom Cruise or any sort of a person who's been in movies.
Yeah.
Dennis Leary, when that came out, had been in a ton of movies. He had been in some really high-profile movies.
Fuck yeah.
I mean, he thought of himself as a guy who had made it. So I think he probably assumed he was going to get a certain level of respect. So when
Geraldo
hit him with, maybe if you did a little writing, your show would still be on the air. That was like a nuclear weapon that he didn't see coming.
He didn't see that coming at all.
He got detonated on.
You know what's great about Geraldo? Is that
hubris. That was hubris.
You look at the look on Geraldo's face, and you can see his eyes twitching, and you can see him going angry, going, 3, 2, I got this, I got this. And then like making his tactical call in his head, you could see that happening almost.
It's a superior mind.
Yeah.
Superior mind, just not as famous, but a superior product. Like what he would put out, his points of view would be superior.
I watched this.
The idea that there would be like something funny and saying that someone prepared. Like, look at him, he prepared.
Just being a bully.
Well, that's the idea that is ridiculous. Like, that's so crazy. Like, oh, look at the painter. He went and painted. Like, what the fuck are you saying?
There's a certain personality that, and I'm not going to speak, I'm not saying this is Dennis Leary, but there is a certain personality that's so arrogant in that the way I say it will be so much better than the way you say it, as opposed to what I say is better than what you say. So, like you can hear the statement before him when he says, well, we're going to go to a war with a country. Like, it was very arrogant, and he was like, yeah, like that great Russian war. Like, yes, that does fucking work. You're not listening to the words. You're overlooking the thought.
Well, he has this idea that somehow or another he's going to be able to solve what hundreds of scholars and heads of states and diplomats and embassy workers, and no one can solve. No one can solve, but he's going to come along and tell you exactly how things need to be run. The ideas of, first of all, communication between nations where they don't even speak the same fucking language.
Yeah.
You know how difficult that shit is? It's so fucking hard just to understand things in cultural context and explain those to the different people that are in your country that you're sort of representing. Because Koreans are not like Americans, and Americans are not like Koreans. People that live in North Korea do not understand how we're living in North America. And the people in North America, for the most part, really are fairly ignorant about what the fuck is going on in North Korea. And one of the big reasons is because we can't fucking communicate with each other. Yeah. If we could communicate with each other, if everybody in in North Korea knew how to speak English, and they all could read the shit on the internet about how the world is run and what the fuck is really going on in their country and how the rest of the world views things, they would probably slowly but surely take action. But the fact that they're separate from the rest of the world, the fact they speak this one very unique sort of a language that's difficult to learn and isn't translatable very easily to English or Spanish or
is Korean else. Not translatable? No,
it's difficult.
I mean,
symbol. This the way things are written
like,
and everything.
Our good friends are Korean, and that when you go to we went to a Korean barbecue. His name's Roy Choi. He's the guy that started the taco truck. The concept of the taco truck, it's him.
He started it. He was the first guy.
The premise of these gourmet taco trucks.
He's Asian?
Yeah. Roy Choi. He does. He's good friends with Bourdain.
Asians don't give a fuck, dude. They get things done. They get things done. Don't they?
They really get it done.
They fucking get things done.
They really do. They're the fucking future of America.
When you eat, how the fuck did they ever figure out how to get...
I don't even know what you've said yet.
A full like, stranglehold on the manufacture of, like, electronic parts and TVs and laptops and
cars.
And shit.
Cars are over there now. There's really? Nowhere in Detroit. No one's doing cars in Detroit.
Well, isn't Chrysler still in Detroit and isn't Ford?
But no one's in Detroit. Detroit's apparently in peril because everyone took their business to Asia. Well, is it more an idiocracy? Not idiocracy. Theocracy? Not theocracy. What's the word I'm looking for?
Idiocracy.
Is it?
Idiocracy.
What are you trying to
where explain? Like where it's like the idea of the state is better than the person. So everyone looks up to the state.
Fascism? And
it's something like that where they care about their job. Like Americans just don't care.
Well, you know what happened is, first of all, the cars they made sucked. That happened.
In America.
Yeah. Something happened. We have to figure out
there
what
was a period
where
we got really lazy.
What the fuck went wrong from like 1973 to like
the Ford Tempo.
90 fucking 80.
Ford Tempo was a phone-in job by the American. Like, that car sucked dick.
It's not just that car.
It sucked dick. In 1989, Ford Tempo sucked dick.
But the Ford Tempo's a Ford Tempo. What the fuck happened to the Mustang? Okay, because let me tell you something.
Well, in the 80s, it was great.
I can say this. I have a Mustang today. Yeah. I have a Shelby GT500, and I fucking love it. Okay, but that's a 2010, and between like 1965 and
1972
or 73, they had some dope fucking car. Really like to 69, but then something happened in like the 70s and the 80s. Like, you call that a fucking Mustang? What are you, a communist? What did terrorist infiltrate the fucking the Ford plants and hold down the designers by gunpoint and gay up all the drawings? Like, how the fuck do you call that?
By the way, ungay them.
I spell gay G-H-E-Y.
Or ungay them, Joe.
Homosexuals.
Like, because I wonder if it was it had to do with homosexuality and the fear of homophobia. And they took all these great gay designers that were super closeted in the 50s and then there was this manliness and they disappeared.
Are you trying to say that dick sucking designed the Corvette?
No, there's no way you can tell me as a man what is sexy without knowing sexy as a man.
What the fuck are you talking about, Pete Townsend?
The Corvette is the sexiest car you can put me in.
Is it really?
I just drove one from Miami to Marco Island, and I tell you right now, the second I sat in that seat, I would let the steering wheel be close to my face because I wanted it there. It was just fucking... What kind of car was it? A Corvette.
Which year?
Brand new. 3,000 miles, convertible.
Oh, the new ones. Was it a 426?
I have no idea.
The 426s, they have the Z06 Z06 engine and suspension in a convertible. Oh,
so fucking hot. Like, I just felt cool as shit in that car.
That's not a Corvette, Brian. It's a goddamn Miata, and it's pink. How dare you hate America on this podcast? Hating America.
I gotta poop.
Well, why don't you go poop, man? We'll wait. We'll hold on.
Yeah.
What time is your comedy show tonight, Brian? And
I don't know.
Can we guide people in your general direction?
No, I don't even know where I'm gonna go. I'm just gonna try to get up somewhere.
Now, when you do that, what do? You just show up and say,
Show up and try to sneak my way in. Like,
hey, my name is Brian Redband. You might know me on Twitter.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that what you do?
Yeah.
Why don't you start a room your own, Brian?
Huh? I did. I have like three rooms every
year. So, do you think ever we'll be all contained under one roof? Do you think that ever the full Death Squad family will have podcast studios in one gigantic warehouse?
I'm in.
Because that's what I'm saying.
I'm
saying we also duplicate this at the Onnit compound in Texas.
Why not?
Yes, Austin. Let's
high
go.
Fence, thousands of acres, our own lake, plus deer to shoot.
How do we get it?
Solar power, bitch. Did I say what? What? Maybe we can have our own fucking satellite. Okay.
How do we get a Death Squad like studio in a warehouse where we can make TV shows?
It's easy.
Well, I don't want to make a TV show.
Why not?
Because I'm busy, bitch. I'm busy.
No, Joe, it just needs to be an umbrella.
Listen, if I make a TV show, here's my next TV show. I'm going to play pool.
Pool around that's Lake Geist. I think it's a great idea. It's not boring.
It's not for you, bitch. It's not for you.
99% of people.
The other show is we are very close to sign. I can't say with who.
Don't even but, say what it is.
There's a show that is a a lot of it is fuck? Based in the podcast. What are you doing? Taking text messages
no.
and talking about them live on the air?
No. This person said that they got a new phone number. They're like, sorry, I got a new phone number. And I thought they were lying. But now they're sending me pictures of this. Who is that?
Gaddafi?
Is that Gaddafi?
Yeah.
All right, so it might be not the person I'm thinking it is.
Okay. Yeah. You're getting someone sending you murdered people.
Wait, what's the new show you're doing?
What's that?
What's the new TV show you're doing?
Oh, it's based a lot of it on like controversial subjects, and a lot of it all of it will start off from the podcast, like examining all sorts of different. There's no tentative. Well, we sort of have a tentative title, but I'm not necessarily happy with it. So the idea is. Like the way we've done the podcast where we explore all these different ideas, whether it's shamanism or ghosts or Bigfoot or UFOs or fringe topics, crop circles, reincarnation, psychics. And we're going to talk about it on the podcast. Like I'll have a guy like you or Ari or Duncan or Joey or any comedian come on and we'll say, you know, it's like we'll do it right now. What do you think about Bigfoot? Do you think that it's possible there could be an undiscovered primate that people have been talking about and reporting for ages, and it's somehow or another eluded photography, except for a few really questionable photos and some really fucking shitty video that looks fake as fuck. Put all that aside. Put all the hoaxes aside. Do you think it's possible?
I think it's possible, 100%.
Why do you think that?
Because I believe.
Whoa.
Yeah, I believe.
Wow.
I believe in Loch Ness Monster. I believe in Chupacabra.
You believe you can fly?
Do I believe I can fly?
R. Kelly pee on you if you were a 14-year-old girl and you didn't know why you were there in the first place.
I definitely believe that I have the capability to fly in my body. I just haven't figured it out. And once we do tap into that, I will be able to fly.
Okay. But like Bill Hicks used to say, start on the ground floor.
Right.
Bill Hicks had a great joke about a young man who, on acid, thought he could fly, leapt to his death. What a tragedy. He goes, what an idiot. He goes, if you thought he could fly, why did you start off on the ground?
Don't you feel like that? I remember when Star Wars Return of the Jedi came out. Empire Strikes Back came out. I remember watching Luke move stuff with his mind. And I remember being in the back of my car trying to do that hard as fuck. Like staring at objects going like, get it up.
Trying to make shit fly.
I swear to God, because I was like, that it seems logical.
Well, there's certain aspects of life that seem so preposterous and unrealistic.
Static electricity. What the fuck is that? It just hits you.
Have you seen those Tesla like experiments where he was like touching electricity and it was like a bolt was flying through this big Tesla coil and it's connected to his arm?
Hold on.
Have you seen any of those photos?
Did Tesla just have you seen the new Tesla fucking car?
Did you see them all explode when Hurricane Sandy hit the beach in New Jersey?
What?
Yeah, there was a whole warehouse that had like this. They had a dock and they had all these new Karmas. That's what it was. The Fisker Karma. It wasn't a Tesla.
Tesla looks badass. $50,000. It looks gorgeous.
So there's quite a few really beautiful electric cars right now, but the Fisker Karma is the one, and they had like 16 of them, I think, exploded on the docks. Because they had them on the docks, and the water came up. When the water hit these fucking
electric
boxes,
cars,
they just burst into
like
flames.
Transformers?
Yes. They just fucking blew up. And everybody was like, oh, okay. Shit. I don't think they knew that would happen. What happens if you drive over fucking standing water? What if you're driving home from a flood? Does your fucking car explode? Okay, because I can deal with my car shorting out.
It's raining, and you're just sitting there scared to leave.
Like, but if I can save like $2 a gallon, but my car explodes when I hit a puddle. Is that going to happen? Is that what the fuck is really going on? Really, Fisker Karma people?
That Tesla looks bad as shit.
We won, it was either Motor Trend or Road and Track, Car of the Year. One of those big magazines made it the Car of the Year. The Tesla, not the Roadster, but the larger car, something S. It's like a four-door, and apparently it's just a marvel of engineering, but...
The real problem is going to be state taxes on roads. The roads will go to shit.
There's a lot of problems. Another problem is the fact that everybody wants to pretend that buying some sort of an electric car removes you from the fossil fuel food chain.
Yeah.
But it doesn't.
No.
And in fact, it connects you with some even shadier minerals on like a really large scale, like lithium ion and all those different minerals. A lot of those are conflict minerals. They come from the Congo. They come from Afghanistan. They come from, like, if I was Brian Callen, I'd say Afghanistan. If I was Amber Lyon, I'd say, what was it she was talking? Bahrain.
Please, not in the book.
Bahrain. Yeah. These minerals that you need to create a lithium ion battery. By the way, mad love to Brian Callen and mad love to Amber Lyon, which is fucking with you. Those minerals that you need to make batteries, they come from like really fucking imprisoned and impoverished areas. They're conflict minerals. Lithium ion is officially like a conflict mineral. Like a lot of shit that you need to even make cell phones. It's like, I think Vice had a guide. They did a Vice Guide to Travel episode where Shane Smith went to the Congo and they were.
I don't know why they're not on Travel Channel. I would love to see one of their fucking shows.
Because it's too deep. They go too deep.
The same shit Bourdain does.
No, they go way further than Bourdain. Way further. It's not even close. Where Vice goes to the fucking Congo deep, deep, deep and talks to warlords.
Really?
Okay, they go looking for dinosaurs.
Yeah, I'd love to see that. I think they could put that on. Why not? We enjoy watching it on the internet. Why can't Travel Channel put it on?
You're correct. However, most people that run these organizations, whether it's a network or, you know, it's cable or whether it was broadcast television, they're very conservative because they're trying to sell advertising space.
Yeah,
so when a company like Vice comes along and they have like
they have no respect for any corporation at all because they'll do what the fuck they need to do to make what they think.
And they have
is
videos
real.
Where Hamilton Morris goes into the jungle and he's taking crazy drugs and lying on his back and. You know, I mean, it's like they're not going to sell Tide during those times. You know, they're going to have to accept that.
They're not going to sell Tide.
But they do. See, that's what's really stupid. It's like there's this weird sort of game that we play, whereas we pretend that the people that see all the fucked up things that you can find on the internet are not the same people.
That wash their clothes.
Or
I wash my clothes.
Buy gas or, you know, any of the variables, any of the things where you try to target people. We're all the same fucking people, man. We just have access to different shit now. We need to accept that. You need to just stop pretending that we're living in some sort of a Catholic school, you know, Sandra Bullock movie view of the world.
Yeah.
It's not reality. Reality is there's a lot of fucked up shit about out there, and I can find it now. I can find it on the internet. It's really easy. So you need to sort of adjust your expectations accordingly, because there's a lot of evidence. A lot of evidence that shows that reality is pretty fucking slippery.
Yeah.
There's a lot of nutty shit out there.
But that Tesla car looks bad as fuck.
Yeah. It will explode if you hit a puddle.
What a horrible feeling.
They look dope. I like the that's the 426, that one that Brian just put up. That's the new Corvette convertible. It's got a 505 horsepower. The last version of this engine, I think it's called the LS1, but it's might be wrong, but it's a just huge fucking power and torque. That's also in the ZR1, the same engine. They supercharge it in the ZR1. It produces 648 horsepower. Like, this is, like, for people who, like, talk about, like, muscle cars, this is, like, the greatest era of muscle cars in the history of the fucking world. The muscle cars that people are creating now actually can take turns, and they actually have good brakes. Like, there's a Shelby Mustang they have now that's unbelievable. The regular, they have the 302 Boss Mustang that's, like, you know, it's like they're, like, moderately powered. It has 440 fucking horsepower. It's unbelievably powerful.
Is it the Dodge
Challenger?
Challenger?
Yeah.
We went to
More of a muscle car, though.
We went to drive Lamborghinis and Ferraris and Porsches on a track for a trip flip. And the dude's just wanted to drive the Dodge Challenger. They would take you out for a ride, and they were like, this is more fun for us to drive.
Why is that?
I have no fucking idea, but they did everything, and they do the burnouts where they spin in circles.
God.
They were like, it's just more fun. Like, those things, I think, like, I definitely have driven a ton of those Lamborghini-type cars. Those things are fun as fuck, but it is a different drive than, like, it is really... You don't feel as loose, maybe, as you do in a Dodge Challenger. Like, in a Dodge Challenger, you're fucking sliding and you're
feeling
it. Yeah.
Well, they have a broad sort of a you could pick from like a lower horsepower engine to like a really ridiculous engine and those things.
Yeah.
Like you could like ramp it up. And there's a lot of people who take those cars and they ramp them up even more. Like Hennessy, I know Hennessy makes like a 700 horsepower Challenger.
I love when you get like those special edition cars.
Yeah. But what they are though, like the muscle cars of old, those things you couldn't take corners in them.
Yeah.
Like these are like completely different animals, but the Challenger is still like a muscle car. Whereas like the Camaro has become almost like a sports car because they handle so well.
It might have been a Camaro they were driving now that I'm thinking about it. But like we were taking corners in the Lamborghini at like 90 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Taking corners. Fucking insane.
Yeah, you can do ridiculous shit with sports cars.
I flew to Italy for a day to drive a Ferrari down the coast.
Yeah.
Like I had to drive a fly. I think I texted you about it.
Yeah,
you
which
like,
one did you drive?
I have no fucking clue. But it was I just drove it down the coast and I had a chase car in front of me, a chase car behind me, and they just taped it and I just fucking flew.
Wow.
It was so much fun. Like those paddle bop, just flying.
Yeah, those paddle shifters, a lot of people are upset about that shit though. A lot of people think that a real sports car, you should shift it manually, and that just because it's quicker to shift it with the paddles, like you're missing out on part of the experience. And I kind of agree, man, because I like shifting my own gears.
There's
something fun about it.
I do too, but there's so many people that probably have never learned how to do that. They can't learn on a Ferrari. I'm sure that's just a sales thing because the paddle shifters are much easier.
Yeah. Way easier, but it's not as satisfying. I mean, it's not that it's hard to shift your own gears, but there's something that's like mechanically engaging about putting the clutch in, sliding the shifter forward, letting the clutch out, hitting the gas at the same time.
Something super sexy when you met a girl that knew how to drive a stick, and you were like, you got a good dad.
Especially if it's like a fucking Mustang or something crazy. This dirty bitch is out there driving a big fat V8. She wants to drive when you go to the movies, and you got to say no, and you got to not let her be on top the first time you fuck either. It's very important. You got to establish dominance immediately, Bert Kreischer. You got to grab that bitch and let her know the feeling of gravity and the density of the bones in your hips. You know what I'm saying, Brian? Holla back. So, Bert Kreischer, how much time have you spent on the road lately?
I'm fucking dickload. I'm on the road every week, I feel like. I'm home 2 days this week.
I'm going to take a leak. Talk to Brian about it.
Okay.
This is in the podcast. It's been 4 hours.
Give me just five minutes, Brian. I'll tell you a story.
All right. Tell me a story, sweetie.
Okay. Do you want to hear the story that I had? I got to make it. Okay. I'll tell you a good story.
Let's talk a secret story.
A secret story.
Let's talk a secret story.
This is the reason no one would listen to the Brian and Bert podcast. Because I find you funny too often.
Oh, thank you. I find you funny all the time.
No, but we like I listen to the podcast, and when I hear you say things that maybe stop Joe or like Dice, like you said like two or three things that made me laugh so hard during the Dice podcast.
I'm smoking in the studio right now like a bad boy.
What's in that room right there?
That's behind me is just an empty room. There's a lot of empty rooms here at the studio.
So I'll tell you the story, okay, Brian? All right. So I checked into – I did Columbus, and then I did – right after that I did Kentucky.
Right.
Checked into the Kentucky hotel, the hotel in Kentucky. And I have four bags. I have shirts for 2 weeks. So I have four bags. Bellman takes my bags, takes them – I have to let him take them in my room because, you know, he's going to get a tip. We go in the elevator. He asks what I do. I say I'm a comic. We get out, and the second our door opens, another door opens, and it's a older white dude. And he walks out like three steps behind us, and he follows me down the hallway three steps behind us all the way until we get to the end of the hall where my door is. And I'm like, is he going to my room? Turns out he's in the room directly next to mine. So as he goes to open the door and like put his key in, I jokingly, in front of this bellman, thinking he'll laugh, I go, hey, man, if you want, we can open up that center door and hang out all weekend. And the guy now is, like, nervous and he's trying to get his key in. And he's like, no, I don't want to do that. And I go, well, it could be cool. We'll, like, get to know each other.
Wait, you said this
to the
guy?
I said this
to
this
guy.
Why
would you say that to the guy?
Just fucking around.
You want him to kiss you or
no,
something?
No, just fucking
Why
around.
Why would you ever even bring that up?
I'm just fucking around. Just fucking around as a comic should do.
All right. But what if he said yes?
I don't think he will. He's an older man.
Yeah, but what if he did?
He's an older man.
You asking someone for some butt sex?
No,
yes,
listen.
He wants
I'll
butt
tell you.
Sex.
Let me tell you. Let me. I'll tell you the story. So I get, I checked into the Kentucky, I go to do the Kentucky Improv or whatever to Louisville. And I have four bags with me, and the bellman takes my bags up the elevator for me. And I got
a
little.
Is this a gay story?
No, it's not at all.
It's super gay.
It's really, it's one of the funnier things I've done in a long time.
Can we put
time.
Music to the back of it?
Yes.
We'll wrap it up with this. Is this a strong enough story to close the podcast?
Yeah, it might be. It might be.
Okay, pull up Roadkill Ghost Choir, Beggar's Guild, and we're going to play that in the background. Come on, sweetie. Let me design this thing. I know what I'm doing. Trust me.
Oh, did you pull up? Miss me.
No, no, you can't kiss me. You got to stop. That, you know, we're playing that out. We already did that today with the Brad Pitt, Stephen Dorff
what's
thing.
What's the
Roadkill Ghost Choir, and the song is Beggar's Guild. We need to get a Death Squad iTunes account, don't we? We can just order things online. You know what we need? Real internet. Hi. Hi. Hi, real internet.
We need to hang out at Death Squad more.
Yeah, okay. We can do one this week there. We want to do Fridays there? We can do Fridays there with Callan.
Fridays? Yeah, because I have the ice house.
Okay, beautiful. All right. Now, Bert Kreischer, what were you trying to tell me?
Jesus Christ.
What were you telling me, buddy? What were you telling me?
You're in Louisville, Kentucky.
Hey, don't be ignorant, you Columbus, Ohio fuckneck.
Columbus, Ohio fuckneck.
I never heard that.
Fuckneck, I just invented it.
So
I never heard it myself.
Probably the wrong song for this, but...
It's the perfect song for us.
So
tell me what happened. A little volume, please.
Yeah, a little more volume. So I check into the Kentucky Improv, and a black dude checks in my bags. He grabs my bags, puts them on the trailer thing, brings them in the elevator. I gotta let him take it to the room. He's earned his tip, right?
Right, right.
So we take him up to my room. He says, "What do you do?" I said, "I'm a comedian." He goes, "Oh, okay." And we don't talk after that. Doors open. Second elevator door open. The doors next to us and the elevator next to us open, and an older white dude walks out and follows us, and he ghosts us down like... the whole hallway. Everywhere we go, he follows us. He's going wherever the fuck we're going.
Mm-hmm.
We get all the way down to the end of the hallway.
How far away is he walking behind you?
3 feet behind us the whole time.
I would have knocked that motherfucker unconscious.
It's awkward. It's awkward. And we're both noticing it.
You didn't confront him?
We're all noticing it. So we get to the last door, and I'm thinking, is this guy going to my room?
I would assume that guy's trying to do something bad to you.
Kissing the butt.
You wouldn't assume there's something really wrong going on?
That's what I would think.
No.
What would the last thing you would do, Joe?
Listen,
at this point?
Here's what happens. First of all, when someone is mirroring you like that, 3 feet, they're being very disrespectful because they're not just following you. They're letting you know they're following you, and they're doing it in a very arrogant way.
Or they're being
and
flirty.
Well,
they
well,
could
here's,
be.
Here's
that,
what
that
happened.
Could be psychotic. So
here's what happened.
What would you do, Joe?
Immediately, I would ask them what the fuck's going on. All right,
now watch what he does.
It turns out. He's in the room next to me. So he was going to his room.
Oh, my God.
So as he goes
over. Were you high?
I was drunk.
Oh, so you're paranoid?
No, but I was thinking about it.
Were you scared about life?
I have a lot. Lot
what
of,
were you thinking about?
I was thinking about mortality. The black guy knew I was a comic, and I wanted him to know that I knew Kevin Hart.
Kevin Hart.
Because that's what I thought he
that
would
was
love.
Was going to save you?
No, no, hold on. And so the old guy goes to open his door, and I jokingly... Now, I've told the black guy I'm a comic, but I haven't done anything funny. So I jokingly look at the old guy and I go, "Hey, if you want, we can open up that connecting door and we can hang out all weekend." So it gets better. It gets better, Brian. So the guy's now can't get his, because he's now I've panicked him and he can't get his door open. And he goes, "No, no, I don't want that to happen." And I go, "No, it'd be cool, man. We'll open it up. We'll hang out with like the darkness and just talk to each other at night." And he can't get his door open and finally gets his door open. And he goes, "I don't want that to happen." The door opens, and before he can close it, I stick my head in and I go, "Hey, man, if you change your mind, knock and scratch." So he goes, "No," and he shuts the door and he's fucking panicked. And I look to the black guy, and the black guy's gone. He's in my room. Okay? So I go, "Fuck, I did that joke for nothing." So I go into the room, and the black guy's putting the bags down, and he gets done all the bags, and I go to take... You might want to get ready to cue the music, Brian. I go to give him a tip, and the black guy looks at me and shakes his head, and he goes, "No." I said, "Well, I got to give you a tip, man. You took my bags up here." And he goes, "No. Just knock and scratch." So I look at the black guy, I go, "Okay." So I knock, and I scratch, and the guy in the other room goes, "I don't want to fucking hang out, man!" And the black guy falls apart laughing. He's on the ground like...
So the guy in the next room called downstairs?
No. The black guy, the guy who I told the joke for in the first place, heard the whole thing, and he goes, "No, man, don't do it. You got to knock and scratch." So I knocked and scratched, and the fucking guy's like, I don't want to hang out, man.
Burt Kreischer, that's rude.
Oh, it's fucking the funniest thing I've ever done. You're
taking a poor guy with a lot of insecurity, and you're fucking with his head.
Funniest thing I've ever done.
But that's kind of bullyish. You feel bad for that poor dude, scared of dicks in his ass.
So bad. The whole weekend, I kept talking loud as fuck in my room, just going, I know he's listening to me.
Why didn't you just knock on the door and say, hey, man, I'm a comedian. I'm really sorry.
It was past that.
It was past that?
Oh, yeah.
So you had to just, like, fucking just burn all the evidence.
I had to fucking blow the flamethrower.
You just had to fucking just shoot rockets from helicopters.
Is this the Incredible Hulk music?
This is the end. This is the end.
I could do this podcast all fucking night.
Friend, the end.
Well, thank you very much, Death Squad Ohio.
You, sir, are a bad motherfucker.
I had such a great time today, man.
You're welcome anytime, my friend. If there's anything we could do to help you in any way, shape, or form.
You've done everything you could imagine. My vodka coming when it starts.
Us know, Bert Kreischer. We will launch that bitch. Machine Vodka is in motion, ladies and gentlemen. Machine Vodka just became an official sponsor of the Joe Rogan Experience podcast. They have 1 year free sponsorship. We will talk about Machine Vodka for 1 year for absolutely zero money. And you will buy it all up, and Burt Kreischer will have a helicopter and a place on a volcano in Hawaii.
So I can fly to our Texas compound with the high walls.
Burt Kreischer is going to buy Terrence McKenna's house on the Big Island and convert it into a bikini factory where the hottest girls in the world will make $1,000 an hour, and they'll make bikinis.
And Leighton Meester will be one of my models.
Exactly.
With Rachel Ray.
Les Miserables will play in the background until everyone becomes a sex slave, zombie, robot.
This has been
remote
a fun
control.
Fucking afternoon of talking.
Yeah, it was beautiful, man. This is what we should do all the time. We should do this once a week.
You were the reason I have a podcast.
I'm
a grateful fucking
you're
man.
You're the reason the podcast is successful.
And Brian, you're how I know how
together.
To put a podcast up.
We are all together in this crazy soup of life, Burt Kreischer. I am as happy for you as you are for me.
We are both
together, very fortunate, along with Jamie, the new guy, along with Brian.
Have you
Redman.
Said anything, Jamie?
Shut up.
No,
he's not ready yet.
He's not ready?
He needs to go through an apprenticeship. You need
Eight
to see
years.
Success and failure. Precious. Let me eat it raw.
Yes, he does.
Listen. Does this like puzzles? Ladies and gentlemen, this is the end of a commercial-free podcast here at the Joe Rogan Experience. What can you do to give thanks? What can you do? Incorporate all the messages of the Burt Kreischer Burt podcast into your life, bitches.
Burtcast, baby. Check it out.
The Burtcast at burtburtburt.com. You can find all the information. Incorporate those lessons into your life. A, don't be a cunt. B, look in the mirror. C, get your shit together, bitches. Get your shit together. We love you, but
first, you
must love yourself. In order for you to love yourself, you must respect yourself. In order for you to respect yourself, you need to get your shit together, bitch. Give yourself advice. Pretend you are an outside, an objective observer of your own existence. And what kind of advice would you give yourself to get your shit together? And why won't you follow that shit yourself? Stop pretending. You can't bullshit a bullshitter. Suck it. Death Squad 2013, bitches. We're here. Fuck a Mayan.
Praise Odin, son.
Praise Odin, bitches. Odin knows what the fuck is up. And go to Rogan.ting.com and save $50.
God bless.
Jihad.
God bless.